Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Hi, I'm Brother Gregory, and we're always talking about the Kingdom of God, and I was recently a guest on the Randy Moggins Show, and so here are some of the highlights from that show and that interview. God bless. Enjoy.
My first guest tonight I'm going to bring up in a second here is Brother Gregory. The website is hisholychurch.com. I interviewed him maybe about 5 years ago. And he comes from the Christian perspective, but don't be put off by the word church here, because that word church has really, really been distorted ever since the installation of the Constantinian church system, which is Rome. And we want to bring him on. We want to welcome Brother Gregory to Off Planet Radio. Good evening and welcome, sir.
Good evening. Glad to be back on your show.
Yeah, it was a different show back then. That was actually the Threshing Floor show, and that was a show that was heavily into Bible prophecy. And we had a wonderful conversation at that point, and you introduced me to, I think, some concepts that at the time I wasn't really ready for. I was still, believe it or not, kind of anchored in some of my old thinking about the way things work. Brother Gregory, give us a little bit of a history of His Holy Church, how you came to forming the community that you have formed and the vision that you have for scaling these type of communities, which are communities of faith and communities of service.
Yeah, we're really just trying to conform to what the early church was doing, which almost nobody today really has a grasp of. And because of that, you know, we've written a lot of books and they're all free online. We've written a lot of articles and they're all free online so people can go and get educated. Everything we publish is very iconoclastic. We upset the apple cart. The church, the early church ministers, the early church monks, they wore swords at their side just the same as the Levites did, but they were not militant. They were there for the defense of the individual, but they were also there for service. What was bringing Rome into bondage, the Roman Republic was moving from a republic into a socialist democracy and then dictatorship, and they were doing this by offering benefits from men who called themselves benefactors but exercised authority. And this is where Christ came into conflict with both the Herodians, the Pharisees, and the people who had set up a welfare system that operated by force. In other words, once you signed up, you had to pay in. What you would get back would be determined by Congress, then was called the Sanhedrin in Judea and the Senate in Rome. But the welfare was handed out according to statutory regulations. That's not the way Israel was formed. That's not the way early Rome was formed when it was a republic. And we educate people on how that actually worked. And we show people, I show people all the time, you know, you read these little phrases in the Bible and these little verses in the New Testament, the Old Testament, they actually have another meaning that just kind of zips over everybody's head because they don't understand history. They don't understand the language of the time. And we show them. Our books have 700, 800, 900 footnotes in them. So you don't have to take our word for it. You can look it up yourself. But it is iconoclastic. We are going to make you think. Because Christians not only survived the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, they thrived during that period. Why? Because they were doing something completely different than what the Roman Empire was doing. And the Roman Empire was doing exactly what you see governments today doing. Exactly. And we can show you that. I mean, all your economy problems, you know, banking problems, all these things were happening at the time of Jesus Christ and the first century church. They took the silver out of the coin, so you had iron coin. A sack of wheat went from 6 denarii, which is about 6 dimes for 30 pounds of wheat, to 120,000 denarii for the same sack of wheat, because there was no more silver in the coin. When I was a boy, you could buy a loaf of bread for a dime. Today, it's going to cost you $3 to buy a loaf of bread. But there's no more silver in your dimes. If you had a dime, you could probably still buy a loaf of bread. This is just the beginning. Paying $300 for a loaf of bread in the future is not unreasonable, because you've gone the way of Rome. And what we're trying to show people is what the early church was actually doing. And that's quite different than what you're going to get in your local Baptist, Methodist, Catholic, Mormon church. So anyway, and you know, I have a background in languages, a background access to people I knew who were in the, actually had access to the Vatican libraries. But a lot of this stuff, you don't need old dusty books. It's actually right there, hidden right before our eyes. And so that's what we do, is we reveal what that is and what that looks like and what you can do about it now, because I think we're about to face the decline and fall of the New World Order that isn't all that new and isn't all that orderly.
No, it certainly isn't. As you were kind of going through your introduction, it was just stunning to hear it verbalized, because it's something that I've believed for probably most of my life, that we actually live in the prophetic parallels of that same period of time of the early church. Even when you look at the institution of our government on the North American continent, with what's euphemistically called the United States of America, we're living in a Roman-type system. Our law system now has been reconfigured away from the original constitutional form into a democracy, and that, as nearly as I can tell, began back at the time of the Reconstruction after the Civil War, and has just continued to advance. So you talked about compulsory participation. We're not volunteering into a system anymore. We've been volunteered into it, and we're now slaves to it. It doesn't sound a whole lot different than what you had in Rome or even in Jerusalem in the time when Christ walked the earth.
Absolutely. In the New Testament alone, just as an example, show you the sophistry of how we can be misled. You read the Bible, people translate the Bible. I use the King James all the time. Not because it's the best translation, but just because it's popularly available. But then I show you what the words actually mean. There are five different Greek words, completely different Greek words, that are translated into the single English word world. If you don't know which one they use in different places, you won't know what they're talking about. I mean, when I say the word world, you're thinking planet, or maybe Disney World, or Wayne's World, or all kinds of things. But when Jesus says, my kingdom's not of this world, you have to read it in the context of who's he talking to. Which Greek word did he use? And what he used is a word that means, and I'm not making this definition up, it means constitutional order, system, or government. That's what he said, and he's saying it to Pontius Pilate. My kingdom is not of your constitutional order or system of government. That's what he was talking about. He says, you haven't got no jurisdiction over me. And what do you see Pontius Pilate doing? Washing his hands of this matter. We have a lot of preconceived notions, and we have to go back and look at the Bible and look at all things anew. Because if we were actually, if all the people claiming to be Christians were actually, for the last 100 years, doing what Christ said, the United States, America, whatever you want to call it, would not be facing the crisis that it's about to face. And it would change the course of the whole world. But unfortunately, we didn't understand. We have gone under a strong delusion, and uncovering that is going to be an iconoclastic process. It's going to challenge a lot of the preconceived notions about what a real Christian is and what they really were doing. And Jews as well, because Jesus and Moses were both doing the same thing, believe it or not. You wouldn't know that, because now when you think of what Moses was doing, you're looking back at what the Pharisees said Moses was doing. But Jesus said, "You don't even know Moses," to the Pharisees. "If you did, you'd know me." And they didn't know him. Well, the truth is, your modern Christian has more in common with the Pharisees than they have in common with Christ because of what they're doing. Now, I don't know who's going to repent and change their ways, but it's my job to show them. And I know this is challenging a lot of people. They'll say, "Hey, well, what? Who made him Pope?" Well, I'm not Pope. I'm just a guy out here in the wilderness. I'm a voice of one crying in the wilderness. But we back up what we say with real research and real evidence. And it's laid out for free. And all they have to do, and you can go to our website. You want to know kind of what we're doing. So we're creating a living network of people all across the United States, Australia, and anywhere else that people will listen, because you can do that today with the internet. And we share all this information, and we show them what you can do and how you do it and why we would do things a certain way. But we have a thing called the Living Network, thelivingnetwork.org. You can get on it by going to hisholychurch.org or preparingyou.com and look for the network links, and you join in your area. And the idea is to connect people in local areas that have what we call kingdom tracks. They're interested in home school, home health, home industry, and they're interested in connecting, you know, home church, connecting families with other families in real ways that start building the bonds of a free society. And it's about taking back your responsibilities. This is what Christians were doing. We can show you the actual court cases of trials, why Christians were getting tried back in 150 AD and 200 AD. What was the dispute? It's because when you got baptized by Christ, you were opting out of the social welfare system of Judea. And then eventually, because Christ was a recognized government, you were opting out. If you were a Roman, you were opting out of the Roman social welfare system, their social security, their national insurance, whatever you want to call it. They were so successful at this that they were accused of robbing the temple at Ephesus. If you didn't understand what the temple of Ephesus was, it was literally the world bank of that day, the most secure vault in all the Mediterranean. They weren't accused of breaking into the vault. What they were accused of is people were joining their system of social welfare, the church's system of social welfare, because it operated by faith, hope, and charity, by the perfect law of liberty. It did not need a central treasury in order to fund the welfare needs of the people. It did it through a network of people who learned to care about each other as much as they cared about themselves. So that when they cast out 14,000 Jewish Christians out of Rome under Claudius, they had a place to go. They were absorbed into a whole network of Christians. When Jerusalem fell, and thousands of Jews who were Christians walked out the front gate, they had to leave everything behind, all their gold, their coats, their property, everything. They couldn't take anything. If they tried to swallow coins, they'd cut you open to get the coins out. So you had to just throw all your money on these rebels who were holding Jerusalem when Titus came to destroy it, and walk out the front gate with nothing. And they tell you in Josephus that the people coming out were given safe passage by Titus. Where'd they go? They had nothing but the clothes on their back. They didn't even have their coats. And they went out and they were absorbed by a network of Christians that reached from Ireland to northern Gaul to northern Africa, because they had created this network of people who actually learned to live by faith, hope, and charity and what Paul calls the perfect law of liberty. And that's what we're teaching people how to do.
So functionally, you're telling me that the first Christian church, which was centered in Jerusalem, was acknowledged by Rome to be a separate society?
Absolutely. You see that. I mean, you have a royal proclamation by Pontius Pilate, who historically at that time, there's some debate on this, but there is some evidence, because you see this in ancient writings, that for a short period of time, Pontius Pilate was designated as the procurator of Rome, not just the procurator of Judea, but of Rome. This happened to be at a time when Tiberius himself was retreating to an island because of an illness he was suffering. Pontius Pilate was married to the favorite granddaughter of Tiberius Caesar. They were in constant male contact, back and forth. She was telling them about Christ. And there's all kinds of evidence of this, and there is some evidence of it in the Bible itself. But anyway, the point is that he, with a royal proclamation, three languages, and you see superscription written in the gospel, this is the King of the Jews, this is the King of the Jews, this is the King of the Jews. And he is writing that. It's not a little broken piece of wood like you see on all the crucifixes, you know, in the Catholic churches. It was actually a plaque in three languages. They didn't want him to write it. He says, what I have written, I have written. He's not going to take it back. And that you even see later on, Christians being defended by Roman soldiers in Judea because they were actually a separate form of government. You didn't have to leave the Pharisees to go under Christ, but if you got the baptism of Jesus Christ, very clear in John, you could no longer go to the local synagogues for your welfare. See, most people don't know that Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven before John the Baptist. But his version of the kingdom of heaven was a social welfare system based on compelled offerings. You had to pay in. And then it went into a central treasury. And then it was redistributed out of that central treasury back to the local synagogues. And you got an ID stone and you were registered. And therefore they knew that you had to pay in a portion of your income in order to remain a member in good faith. And of course they squandered the money and they wasted the money. There were riots at the time of Christ that we know about.
The zealots, basically, if I recall.
Well, zealots were a big part of that, but there were a lot of people that were upset that they had used money to build an aqueduct. On our website, we actually show you pictures of the very stones that made that aqueduct, because they carved them out of limestone, and they still exist today. There were riots that Pontius Pilate himself put down with force, mentioned in the New Testament. But if you don't understand, what were they complaining about? They were complaining about the fact you were pilfering our Social Security fund to build government projects. And they were afraid that money wouldn't be there for them. Social Security today, we show you in our website, it is totally bankrupt. Every time you take any money from that, you curse your children. Peter talks about that. These systems of social welfare are based on covetousness. They're based on benefactors. Christ said, you have seen the governments of the Gentiles. Most people don't even know he said this. You don't ever hear this from preachers today. You have seen the governments of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors, you know, like FDR and all these presidents. They call themselves benefactors, but they exercise authority one over the other. In other words, they take from your neighbor. That's why they talk in the New Testament about taking a bite out of one another and being devoured yourself. Those systems are systems of Corban. Christ said, such systems of Corban make the word of God to none effect. The word Corban is just the Hebrew word for sacrifice. Your Social Security payment, your tax payments are your sacrifice. That's your service to these people. And you signed up for compulsory service in order to get guaranteed entitlements. That's not living by faith. That's living by force. John the Baptist said, they ask him, how does this work? He's out there baptizing too. But he's not doing it like Herod did it. He's not signing you up where you have to pay in. They say, well, how does this work? He says, you have two coats and your neighbor doesn't have any coat. You share. You do it through charity. And do the same in meats, he says. He's telling you how the kingdom of God works. If you do not create for yourselves a social welfare system that operates by faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. We used to do that in America. We used to do that. If you got sick, you got hurt, you got injured, you went to church. Because that's where you were going to get help.
A long time ago, the churches were the primary source for charity. And I don't know where it changed, but I can draw the line, at least in our modern time, that around 1954, when 501c3 and corporate status was extended to the churches by LBJ, and all the major churches, the World Council of Churches obviously drove this at the time. That's, you know, in my mind, the cursed church system of the Protestants versus the, you know, the Romish system. But we've seen now the slow decay of it. And I left my church where I was ordained as a minister 12 years ago over disgust with what was called the prosperity doctrine and the fact that the church had become nothing more than a house of Pharisees, basically. Those with the most amount of money were the elders, and everybody else was secondary. And in order to get help from the church at that time, you had to apply to a church board who considered you, who reviewed it. And it was done in such a judgmental way that you couldn't call it giving anymore. It was the old term would be niggardly. It was basically, they were worried about the money in their treasury and not about the people who were in need.
Absolutely, and this is exactly, like you say, more like the Pharisees. That's exactly what was happening at the time of Christ, and Christ was pointing this out. That's why all the parables about charity and giving, and he really rubbed their nose in it. He says, a Samaritan is more giving. You know, that's why he had a Samaritan in the Good Samaritan story, because they didn't like Samaritans. And here the Samaritan was more like a follower of Christ, a follower of Moses, than the Pharisees themselves. And he was calling them, you know, hypocrites and whited sepulchres and everything. And all that could be said about the modern church. I agree that in 54 there was a huge step with a 501c3, but that's really a nail in the coffin. You can go back to 1933 with the Social Security Act. That was a huge nail in our coffin. You can go back to 1909 when we finally had more people going to public school than private education and being educated in the home. Most people don't realize that everybody before 1909, most everybody was educated out of public schools. And in even the few public school systems that you saw around were heavily funded by private donations. They weren't entirely run by the state. Certainly the curriculum wasn't dictated.
My mother, who grew up in the 1930s, basically, went to a one-room rural schoolhouse with a single room, single teacher, and was educated that way until she went to a community-based school in her high school years. But effectively at that time, local schooling was still done almost at the level of the community.
Absolutely. My own father went to a one-room schoolhouse. And the schoolhouse he went to produced like two admirals, a major general, a vice president, all out of that one-room schoolhouse. So they must have been being taught something. And it was heavily funded by private individuals in the local community. The teachers actually stayed with one of the farming families. Now, that's how it was run. Today, everything is out of the control of the people. This is why we say you want to get back to a free country, a free nation, a free society, you have to take back your responsibilities. That's why I say homeschooling, home health. We had somebody just recently, we've taken over the care of an elderly gentleman who's bedridden. He was in the hospital. The hospital said that he could go home. He was pretty much out of money, so they were going to let him go. And so he's going home. The doctor says he's got 3 weeks to live, probably. He's doing better than ever. We're way past the 3 week period. The bed sores that he had are healing up. He's stronger. He's healthier. And only difference is we're taking care of him at home. And you don't realize what you're missing. How far we strayed. You asked before the show to talk about banking. Acts 6, the Christians are setting up a bank. But it would be illegal in the United States to call what they were setting up a bank. You could call it like a credit union. A credit union is about the closest thing to what they were setting up. Because a credit union cannot be organized for profit. It has 7 board of directors. Those board of directors cannot receive a wage. So if they accidentally make a profit, they have to give the money back to the members. Now, that's very kingdom-oriented. Now, the problem is that even if you set up a credit union today, now, if you did this, yeah, it'll be heavily regulated. What are you going to be depositing in there? You're going to be depositing Federal Reserve notes and everything. If you set up a His Church credit union, you'd be one step away. You know, you'd be on your road back, but you have to know where that destination is. The fact is, you know, eventually Federal Reserve notes and these notes that everybody is producing in whatever country you're in are going to totally collapse. I mean, they're not going to be worth anything someday.
Very soon, I might add.
Yeah, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. I mean, you can go to their website and they say they have no value. So it's kind of a musical money thing. But what you need, and what the early church realized, is you needed this network of people who actually really did care about one another as much as they cared about themselves. You know, we could tell you all kinds of bad things that are going to happen. We're not a doomsdayer. I mean, you can just watch the regular news. You want to hear what bad stuff's coming. But the reality is, because we don't want to attract everybody who's afraid. We don't want to attract everybody who's panicking and scared. We want to attract people who actually care and realize. And because a free society requires personal sacrifice. But the choice of that sacrifice is in your hands. It's not, you know, all governments require sacrifice. But in most governments, the choice is in somebody else's hands as to what you're going to sacrifice. So when you were in bondage in Egypt, I mean, what was the bondage of Egypt? All the gold and silver was in the treasury of the Pharaoh, and you had to pay 20% of everything you earned to the government. And they call that the bondage of Egypt. Today in Australia, I think they can go as high as 53% of everything you earn, and they call it freedom. I don't get why they think that's true. You know, in many other countries, I guess in France, you can go up to over 70% of your income has to go to the government, and they think they're free. But it takes a lot more French wine to fool me than that. So the reality is the whole world's in bondage again. And we'll talk more about this when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom after this brief break.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our life seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom.
Let me ask you this. Is it possible at this juncture for a community, as you're talking about, to run an alternative system? Obviously, we're still at a place where we're interfacing with the new Roman system, the American system, the globalist system. Is it possible on a certain scale to operate either completely outside of that economic system or to some way interact with it that is less contaminating?
There's a number of different levels on which you can approach this, and that's really going to get way more complicated than we can get into the details. But yes, and this is what, when Jesus was saying that his ministers were called out of the world, they were in the world, but not of the world. They couldn't be of the world, but they were in the world. He's telling you, he's using that same word of constitutional order or system of government. But his ministers were under certain restrictions, and we can show you that step by step. And not all our ministers are under that same restriction, but certain ministers are, and they are not, they will not be a part of the system. They will be out, and we try to cultivate them into a place where they would be independent of the need of the system. But we have no interest in showing people exactly how to do that, although we have books published up there that you can download for free that will show you basically what we're doing. But a lot of the details of how to interact and how to keep at arm's length, it really takes a little bit of time to study. And we have free courses that we give to those who want to become ministers and serve other people, and we will teach them these things. We don't have any packages that cost you $1,000 or $500 or any of those things, because what it's going to cost you is your delusions. And you have to come together. We have to get evidence by the way you come together with us that we see you want to serve other people, because that's coming in the name of Christ. He came to serve, not be served. And then when we're talking about everybody else, now most people can't get out of the system. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the understanding. They don't have the resources. But they can start learning. Because the fact is, I tell you, everybody's going to be free one of these days. It's just guaranteed, because the system will collapse. I don't know if it's next year or 30 years from now. Eventually, this is what you see, rise and fall in these systems. But everybody's not going to survive freedom. And the key ingredient to surviving freedom is to love your neighbor as yourself. And to love God, which is, you know, all these virtuous characters of forgiveness and kindness and patience and all these other things. You learn those things by doing. You don't learn about those things by reading about them. So this is why we knew it was important to establish this network. Because without people interacting, how can iron sharpen iron? And when you iron sharpens iron, or iron sharpens flint, or flint sharpens iron, you're going to get sparks. But the reality is, that's how you get a sharp blade, is that interaction. And that's, you know, I just published today on Ephesians, and I go through line by line on chapter 4. It's all on preparing you. And show you that they're telling you, yeah, we don't come together because we're perfect and we figured everything out. We come together because we seek perfection. What is that? Seek to be like Christ. And there's a lot to learn. And once you get in that process, we can teach you a lot of the spiritual things, because there's spiritual changes that start to take place when you start walking this path. I mean, talking about instantaneous healings of people. I'm talking about awakenings of people, overcoming problems, you know, miraculously almost. But, you know, I don't want anybody to take my word for it. Walk the walk, and then you'll find out. Just don't talk about it. You got to actually do it. You actually have to participate. But yeah, there is a way, and in our free church report, which is one of the books we have available, which actually we want to talk about where these changes started taking place in the church. On the cover of that book, we have a picture of Lady Godiva, fully dressed, just in case anybody's worried. Because the real story of Lady Godiva, who never took her clothes off, that story was made up over 100 years after she died. And it was made up by some monk who spent too much time in the monastery. The real story is that she gave up her wealth to prevent her husband of imposing a tax on the people that would fund the welfare that was being offered by the church. She said the church cannot receive money by way of taxation, because that would disrupt the whole flow of the Holy Spirit in what we do. It had to be freely given in order to receive the spiritual benefits of charity. And so her husband agreed that if you will, because he was compelled under the king, this is under a Norman king, she was actually Anglo-Saxon. She's the only woman mentioned in the Doomsday Book, which was the beginning of how we lost all our land. All your land is registered in the Doomsday Book today. But another whole story, which we go into. But the reality was, she gave up her wealth, and she's considered a patron saint of builders, because she built hospitals and libraries and schools with her wealth. That's what she stripped off, not her clothes. And her husband matched this in generosity. These were noble, generous people, undeserving of this purient story made up by some monk 100 years after they were in the grave. But that's why she's on the covers, because when the church started looking for benefits from a tax authority rather than being the church established by Christ, And that's when we talk about His Holy Church, that's not the name of our organization. That's a phrase describing what Christ started. We didn't start anything new. We're just trying to get churches to go back and conform to what Christ started. If you look up the definition of church, it says in Black's Law Dictionary, it's one form of government established by Jesus Christ. That's what a church is. But if you're not doing it the way He said, then you're not the church. And that's what we're trying to show churches. And boy, don't get arguments too much. A lot of people don't like us, but they can't argue the facts. This is what the early church was doing. It was taking care of the needy of society through faith, hope, and charity, creating those bonds in society that's necessary for the survival of any society during hard times. Look in your communities. People are raped in your communities, murdered in your communities, robbed, sometimes by the government robbed, by lawyers and attorneys robbed. Who shows up? Nobody. There's no hue and cry. We don't care about our neighbor as much as ourselves anymore. And why? Because we're out of practice. And that's why we form congregations, to get back into practice. So anyway.
That was a fascinating piece of history that you just trotted out there. And I have to admit that I learned a lot from that right there, because I did not know the real story behind Lady Godiva.
No, nobody wants you to know it except for us. So
this is like, you know, and this is what I noticed going through your website, is this is like almost opening up a box and finding all of the stuff that they took away from your history and from your Bibles and the expunged knowledge that you weren't supposed to know. We've been dumbed down. I mean, even within the Christian church, there is a prohibition on the actual Word of God. It's amazing to me, the lack of understanding of how superficial it is, how colored it is, how everybody's got an interpretation, but we don't really see the parallels in our own culture, in our own society. The church should have been the prophet of God. The church should be the one screaming from the rooftops right now.
Well, the real church is, but you're not hearing from the real church. You're hearing from the apostasy. And they're the ones who have the microphone, so to speak. Which is kind of a joke around me, is that somebody hand me a mic, it's like handing me that double barrel shotgun, because I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you in spades.
The mainstream corporate churches, though, Brother Gregory, are the system. They are actually the harlot church that I see in the book of Revelation, because it is completely an embrace of this system. They operate under their incorporated tax-exempt status. They function in business just like a corporate business does. They have basically the same values. They trot out, maybe this will stir a controversy, but I doubt it, they trot out Romans 13 as a way to be in constant abeyance to the powers that be.
Well, you should read our book on Romans 13, which is called The Higher Liberty, because we tell you what that phrase, that one little tiny phrase, there's all by itself in the Bible that they use all the time, what Paul was actually saying. And it started with an article, and of course I got a lot of flack from different people. They don't attack me directly. Somebody else wrote about one of our articles and mentioned it, and he attacked that guy, but he would never attack me. So I mentioned him in the book that we wrote, and he was the head of a seminary. He's a theologian. But what that really says, that word exousia, the Greek word exousia, that you see higher power, let every soul be subject to the higher power, that's actually the word for liberty in the New Testament. That is the strongest word in the language for liberty, according to Aristotle and other Koine Greek poets of the time. So what it really actually says is, let every man be subject to the higher liberty, because all liberty is of God. There is no liberty but of God. And anyone who opposes liberty opposes God. That's actually what Paul wrote. You think King James was going to have him translate it that way? Absolutely not. They could have got their tongues ripped out if they did that. The word means right in your theirs, concordance. The word means the right to choose, the power of choice. That's what the word means. Let every man be subject to the original power of choice. Where did that come from? God. Now, you go tell that to your average Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran minister, and they're going to say, oh, well, no, that's not true. That can't, you'd be crazy to believe that. But there's the evidence. I didn't make up the concordance definition. I didn't put those words in Aristotle's mouth. I didn't put them in Unamqua's mouth, who was a poet of the time, saying that this word is the strongest word in the Greek language for liberty, meaning the absolute right of the individual to choose. They'll tell you, oh no, that means civil government. Then why on earth, most of the time, when that word is used in the Bible, it's talking about the power of Jesus Christ. When he says, all power has been given unto me, why does he use the word exousia? Because he's the head of the government of Christ. Now, you know, of course, call me a heretic, but that's what he's saying. And, you know, that's why the article became a book. And you can download it for free on the website.
Give the website at this juncture, too.
Yeah, it's hisholychurch.org. We have .com, .net, and everything, but .org is the most up-to-date. And we also have preparingyou.com, preparingyou.com. And that's more congregant-driven, although I publish to it probably more than anybody else. But anybody can become an editor on that. It's a wiki site. We also have the higherliberty.org, the livingnetwork.org, and the burningbushfestival.org. But that's our fall festival out here. And it's just, we have other festivals in Missouri, get-togethers, so that ministers and people can go together and actually meet face-to-face. Like I was saying, we had a small congregation in the Midwest, and there was a nuclear power plant that was looking like it was going to melt down a few years ago during the big floods. And they put out, one of the ministers said, you know, if this actually starts to give off radiation, we may have to leave. And because they were right downwind with a 15-minute drive away. Instantaneously, all over our network, people were offering everybody, they had places to go. Their only problem was, what place do they want to go, you know, if they had to. Well, fortunately, they didn't have to. But, you know, if you have a major blackout in this country, back on the East Coast, you'll have power plants melting down everywhere. Not to scare people, but those are reality. I don't care if it's tornado or flood or famine.
I live just 10 miles above Three Mile Island on the Susquehanna River here. Okay. I can literally see it downriver from the hill here. So I can tell you that's not fear-mongering. That's a reality.
Oh, yeah.
I retreated to the mountains when Three Mile Island melted down, so it's a very real thing, and you're right. Even if we just looked right now at weather and not even talk about EMPs and all the other things that could potentially go wrong, we're sitting on the edge of something that's going to pop in the very near future, because it's just statistically ripe for that to happen.
Well, even if it isn't a matter of a pop, but a slowly grinding down like we see with the Roman Empire, look at GMOs. What can you buy in the store that's probably good for you? I don't know. So you know, that's one of the projects we want to do. We have some church land out here. We want to grow acorn wheat. And so, you know, of course, you know, the laborers are few. The work is abundant, you know. And so we actually obtained some secondhand extra farming equipment that we've been accumulating. We want to start growing acorn wheat, because we actually grew some wheat a number of years ago. And when we went to buy the seed, they said we were lucky to get this seed. It was an older seed. It was an acorn. That's a wheat seed. That's an ancient wheat seed that hasn't been messed with as much as all the others. But they said, you're lucky to get it because Monsanto was in here and bought up everything just after we made our order. So if we'd made our order just a couple of days later, we couldn't have got any good seed because Monsanto bought it up. You can see that this is getting to be a real problem. You can't go out and buy soybean seed. You can't go out that isn't GMO. And it's the food is literally becoming toxic to you. And then, you know, you're going to buy milk in the store. You know, what are you getting? You're going to buy beef in the store? You're going to buy your vegetables? Do you even know how to grow vegetables if you couldn't buy any in the store? So one of the things that we're trying to do is encourage people to learn how to grow their own gardens, produce their own seed, network with people who are in CSAs, that's community-supported agriculture, so you get to know the farmers where you're going. Well, this is real hard for an individual to do, but in a network of people, everybody doesn't have to drive out to the farm. You start becoming a team. It's like the buddy system times 10. Our congregations, we don't want them larger than 10 families. If they get to be 15, 20 families, they should divide into two separate congregations. Still connect. You know, all the feasts, you know, I know a lot of people who have Feast of Tabernacles and all this kind of stuff. I don't see any of them doing what Israel, what the purpose of those festivals, which was to link small towns and nations together. And the way it worked, I'll show you, it's just as simple. Everything in the Bible is practical. Once you understand what they're really doing, they're not piling up stones and burning up sheep. And we've got several books that show you what they were actually doing. They were, those stones even back then were living stones. Same word in the Hebrew for a gathering of friends is a gathering of stones. Same exact word. And you know, I could tell you, I could go into that for an hour and a half explaining that.
Well, there's an article on your preparingyou.com website that I think goes into this. Is it the elders?
Yeah, altars.
Yeah, this is a fascinating article. And honestly, I got to tell you something. I've studied the Bible for most of my life and taught it on radio for over 12 years. And I got a revelation just reading this and realizing. And I connected it right away with the whole concept of the living stones of, you know, we really don't understand the Bible very well, do we? I mean, those of us who have, those of us that thought we were smart guys, all of a sudden there's like all this new stuff that comes out.
Right. And, you know, I actually just realized that probably one of the best evidences backing up, I've actually pulled up the page when you mentioned it. Because it's a fairly recent creation in the page, but you see on it lots of links to other things. Well, we have a pamphlet that's Sacrifice of Sophistry, and I'm also writing a book, The Altars of Blood. And we're going to show you right in the Hebrew language, step by step, that from the beginning, from Abraham, from Shem and Enoch, these altars were men of service who you gave control of your site. You chose to sacrifice to them. What it is that when you pick men, you look out amongst yourself. This is what it says in Acts 6. You pick men you trust. And they say, we'll put them over this job of waiting on tables. It's not right that we wait on tables. The same word tables there is the word for bank. It's even translated bank elsewhere in the Bible. But what you're doing on a small congregational basis is that you give money to that minister to take care of the welfare of your society. You choose what minister you're going to give it to. He doesn't do a good job, you don't give to him anymore. The power of choice, the liberty of choice, is in the hands of the individual elders, not a board of directors, but the individual elders. And you keep your congregation small enough so you know what they're doing. Now, those ministers get to know other ministers, nine other like themselves, and they gather in a congregation. This is the tens, hundreds, and thousands that you hear about back in, you know, the 800, 900, 1100 AD. But the reality is there are books coming out now by historians showing that this is the most predominant form of government in man's history. You wouldn't know that by going to modern public school. And what it is, it's a voluntary system where you take care of the needy through free will offerings. What you've done now is with these benefactors who exercise authority that you went and took oaths to and swore to and signed up to under the penalty of perjury, it's not what you give that's on the altar. It's you that's on the altar. It's your sons and daughters that are on the altar because they're going to take and take and take and take from them. And they'll even take them and make them run before their chariots. All this is explained in the Bible. Paul says it, quoting David, what should have been for your welfare has become a snare. Peter says it, through covetous practices you have cursed your children. Through covetousness, you have made merchandise of yourselves. In other words, human resources. Because you're on the altar.
And I've noticed this as well when, you know, over the years of studying the Bible and even teaching it, that language is all baked right into that. And I don't know how it's right there in the plain translation. That's not really hidden. But, and it was, again, my primary reason for separating from the church that I was last in was because they were carnal. They were about the money, and they were literally about the money. And they had no problem with people using credit cards to even pay their tithes. That to me was appalling. That was so Babylonian that I'm still appalled by it to this day. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it should be the job of the church to get you out of debt, not get you into debt. We're supposed to be setting you free, not binding you up. And certainly not so that we can have a big screen TV in a big church. We don't even, if we put up a building, we want to store something valuable in it. We're home church oriented. We know the temple is made out of living stones. And that's what the network is. We don't want a central treasury. I mean, sure, we need some money to operate too. And occasionally people will help us out with that. But we're driven by passion and love for one another. And that's really, and when we get people that want to do it some other way, you know, we've got a pretty good strong core now that's starting to grow. But this is really not that complicated. Yeah, it's different than what a lot of people have been thinking. But it's really very simple. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love righteousness. Love honor. Stop coveting your neighbor's goods. Start caring about one another. And I tell you, that's where the spiritual power starts to grow amongst you. You don't even see it because you don't make it happen. You are literally changed when you start walking in the ways of Christ. Unfortunately, most people don't know it. I don't want to condemn the corporate church. We don't, because amongst those people, there are still people that are in need of repentance, but they will come out. They're loving people. They're, you know, Christ, when it says Christ, God so loved the world, he uses that same word, constitutional order, system of government, that he gave his only begotten son that it might be saved. Saved from what? From covetousness, from unrighteousness, from greed, from selfishness. These are the things that he was trying to save them from. And if we change there, that's going to be the biggest step towards liberty that you can possibly make. The bondage we're experiencing is the result of our selfishness. You can't, you know, if I could show you the paperwork and how to set yourself free, that will do you no good unless spiritually you begin to change your relationship with your neighbor and with your family and with the world. And so that's what we're trying to teach people how to do. And we're almost at the end of our hour.
We are. And I want to leave with this, Brother Gregory. It's been too long since we spoke, but you've challenged me, you've inspired me, you've educated me, and I suspect that everybody that's hearing this tonight and will hear this as it goes out on the interweb. So I want to thank you for that. This has been an amazing conversation. We opened the door to have you back again. Maybe we can go into a little bit more detail on some things that will inform people. But for those listening, I invite you to go over to the website, which is hisholychurch.org. And examine the materials there. Challenge yourself, inspire yourself, and be inspired by what actual Christianity looks like. Brother Gregory, it's been great to talk to you again, my friend. And thank you for coming on. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you for having me, Randy. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.